Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very...
Well, if you are of a certain vintage, you probably recognize that song. And it's a hint because we are talking about a book today that is built around a camp, and it's called Summer Camp. I'm Jill Nadeau. This is the Larry Mueller Show, and we're really glad that you stuck around with us on WPR News. Our guest is author Ann Garvin. She's in the studio with us. She's a USA Today best-selling author and a finalist for the Thomas Wolfe Fiction Prize. Ann's written six novels, and today we're going to talk about her latest. And luckily enough, she's based right here in Madison. Did you attend summer camp when you were younger? Ann, so thank you so much for being with us today.
It's kind of a dream for me. I'm a little nervous, and I never get nervous, but this is sort of a dream to be on WPR.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. I'm so glad we could do this for
me
you.
Me too. Thank you so much.
You bet. Well, I just can't believe you have six novels, and this is kind of the first one that's come to our attention, so I apologize.
No, don't apologize. This is it's a noisy field.
It really is, and it seems to get noisier. The day goes by. I mean, in my job here, I get so many physical books, PDFs, emails. It's so difficult to, pick them out.
It must be impossible, honestly.
Yeah, it really does get difficult. And I apologize for anyone who we haven't gotten on the air, but we can only do so many.
Yeah.
Because we do read our books. We don't just page through them.
I heard. So. That made me so happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's kind of fun for us, too, because we generally, pick books that we probably wanted to read. And that's why I took this one away from Larry. mostly because it's a theater camp and I'm a theater kid. So, I really appreciated that. Aww. So for those who don't know what Bummer Camp is about, give us a synopsis.
So it's the story is about a camp for anxious and depressed adults that's run by anxious and depressed college students.
I love that.
And there's kind of a ne'er-do-well, I call him a poor man, Tony Robbins, who is running it. And then he leaves with all of the resources, all of the money and supplies, because there's going to be a big gala that they have to throw to save the camp. All of the people that love the camp, they have to throw the camp with only the things that they have on hand at this Wisconsin northern camp.
That's right. It is set in the middle of Wisconsin, where there's a lot of really nice camps. Mm-hmm. Did you use a camp? Did you have a camp in mind when you were doing this?
Yes. Lions Camp up in Rochelle, Wisconsin. I was a nurse there.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It was my first job after nursing school, and it was with kids that were hearing impaired, sight impaired, and differently abled. Mm-hmm. And there was no way I was qualified. No way.
Sort of like the people in your book.
Yeah,
right?
Just like the people in my book. And it was also one of the most formative jobs or times in my life. It was such a strong force moving forward. In fact, it's the reason that I moved to Madison, but because of the people that were there. But just the camp does the magic. I always say the camp does the magic for you. And you know what it's like in theater when you make a community, you get so tight with the people that you're doing your production with.
Yes.
Well, camp is like that because you're out in the woods making your own rules and nothing seems strained there.
No, it doesn't.
Nothing
does. It.
And everything you do is so odd. Like, I look back at the pictures and I show people pictures and they're like, why are you dressed like a robot? And I'm like, it's camp. I don't know.
It was robot day. Come
on. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, you're going to read an excerpt for us. What did you pick out to read?
I just thought, I don't always do this, but I thought I would just read the first page.
Sure. Sounds good to me.
Okay. So this is Bummer Camp. It's chapter one, Old Maid of the Mist. The first rescue me text came from her sinkhole of a sister, Ginger, and it came in the middle of the night. Kat had been mentally flipping through the roster of pretty good colleagues, wondering who she could call and wake up if her water broke somewhere other than a hospital bed. Calling 911 should be reserved for heart attacks and burst spleens, not a healthy pregnant lady who could sit on a towel and drive herself 25 minutes to push, and if push came to labor and delivery. When the second text arrived with a cheery ping, Kat ignored it and used the bathroom for the third time. Pregnancy was like Niagara Falls in their indoor plumbing, and Kat McCarthy was the old maid of the mist. Kat eased herself into bed, yanked the covers to her chin, and looked at the clock. She was in the phase of her pregnancy where no amount of sleep was enough sleep. But Ginger's text had a dark magnetism. They urged Kat to act impulsively in the same way that a whirlpool at the bottom of a waterfall beckoned. The swirling void whispered, "You could jump. Do it. Why not?" But Kat knew why not. Ginger's call had urgent requirements.
Excellent. Yeah. And as anybody can tell listening to that, it's fun. Laugh out loud in some spaces. And I just love books like that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And you just really like these characters. And I mean, I could relate to a lot of them, but especially Kat, I'm afraid.
Same.
So you too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So explain Kat to our listeners.
So Kat is... Kat is, you know, the most responsible of all of us. And she grew up at this camp being responsible for her younger sister and pretty much everybody else because the father and the mother were spent all their days managing the camp. And so as a function of that, whenever things didn't go well, she took it hard. And so the only way that she felt like she could get out from under this over sort of responsible thing was to stop making promises to anyone, because then you've got no one to disappoint but yourself. And so she isolates herself from the camp and from everything else and vows that she's never going to go back there. And of course, she has to.
She does.
She has to go back. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was first reading that, I'm like, would you just look at your text? Obviously, it's important.
Yeah. Like, I love that it gave you anxiety.
I did. That's why I said I can really relate to her. And I really did like, too, where this is her younger sister. And like you said, she's always took care of her. And they just go right back into those roles the minute she comes onto the grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Do we tend to do that a lot?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what things when you go back home, you know, you become the kid and your parents become the parent. And sometimes you don't like that. But then it's comfortable and all those roles, good or for bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's what comfort feels like.
Yeah, it's very true. It's mm-hmm. comfort. I like that.
I like that.
Now, obviously, you were at this camp. Were there any other camping experiences that you had when you were younger?
You know, I only went to one overnight camp for Girl Scouts. I don't know why. I never really was in the camping experience, but I went to this one. And I spent the whole time crying wherever I could cry. Like, I'd go to the bathroom and have a good cry, and then I'd come out. And then when they shut the lights off, I was so homesick. And that delicious kind of homesick mm-hmm. where it feels so good to cry, and you can't really stop. And you don't really realize it's homesick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you spend the whole time going, I don't know what's happening. I can't stop crying.
Yeah.
And I was, what grade were they? Like, 8-year-olds or something.
Oh, that's so young. I know. Some kids go so early. And I was like, how did you do that? I, of course, grew up in Upper Michigan. And we have that
yes,
in common.
That's right.
And, you know, what's the point of going to camp when you're in
that's
the middle
it.
Of
I
the
think
wilderness?
That's, it.
That's
yeah.
the way I looked at it. But I did go to one camp that was in Wisconsin. And it was a horrible experience.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, why would people want to go to camp? But then I hear people who went to camp and they absolutely loved it and it created that community like you had it's, talked about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that it was such a bad experience, but I can see how it could be.
It could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's ripe for that.
And it depends on the kind of camp you go to. These days, of course, there's so many specific ones,
uh-huh.
you know, like the theater camp
yeah.
and others that... yeah, it's really nice because, again, people fit in. So
yeah.
that's really good.
You fit
good.
In, yeah.
Yeah. So you have given me a little, I love this card, that's a map of Bummer Camp.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this didn't get in your book, but can people find it online?
I don't know. I'll have to put it online. I don't know if I've done that yet.
Oh, you should. It's
yeah,
really
I should do
nice.
That. It is beautiful,
yes.
actually.
And it tells you exactly where everything is in this camp, because there's a lot of buildings.
There's
a lot of characters. So
yeah.
just warning you, pay attention when you're reading this. So.
Yeah.
And last year, you and your friends had a summer camp getaway.
We did.
What did you do?
Oh, my gosh. So everybody came on Friday, so they stayed Friday night, Saturday, and half of Sunday. And we brought authors, other authors besides me. Mm-hmm. And we read books, and we talked about books. And every author got to read at the campfire with marshmallows and s'mores. We had off times, hours where people could go do archery or go on the boats or just sit around and read. We did crafts. We did some of the things that write out of the book where we did an auction with these weird things that I picked up at Goodwill, and they wrote stories about them. And we gave the camp like $1,000 after that because we did the auction.
Oh, my gosh.
We had a cake with, you know, the Bummer Camp icing on it, but it was so much fun. And honestly, it was such a, like, I was crying the whole time, which I'm not really a crier, but I just to have my future and my past kind of come together. And people from my high school came.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
How many people were there?
We had 60 people from 10 states.
Oh, my gosh.
And this year, in August, mm-hmm. we sold out in like 24 hours, 80 tickets, and we have like 250 people on the waiting list.
Oh, my gosh.
Like,
wow.
And I think part of it is that, like, this camp isn't really it's, you know, it's still used for kids that have disabilities or, you know. So and when people came, they were like, this is so much nicer than I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
We're like, yeah, it's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
But we used the whole grounds because we got the whole grounds.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful.
Oh, I love that. So if there's someone entrepreneur out there, they should probably be thinking about maybe doing this as a business, right?
Oh, we called it Grown-Up Lady Camp.
Grown-up Lady Camp.
It was so ridiculous and so fun.
I love it. Well, we're talking with Ann Garvin today. She's a USA Today best-selling author, and her latest book is called Bummer Camp. That's with a B. And you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show on WPR. I am Jill Nadeau, and we are talking about this really fun novel called Bummer Camp. Before we get back to Anne, just a reminder that if you miss part of our show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archives at WPR.org/Larry, and you can hear the recordings of our broadcast, and they go way, way back. So anything that you like, I remember this from 10 years ago, you can try to find it. So, and good luck, but you can try to find it. And we had talked about Kat, who we hear this story from her eyes. Mm-hmm. What about Ginger, her sister? Tell us about her.
Well, you know, Ginger she's spent her life thinking that she's kind of a loser, you know, that her inability to, like, stay organized or stay focused in the way that her older sister is makes her feel like she's a lesser than person. But she's not a lesser than person. She's a creative person, somebody whose brain works differently than the rest of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't put people into spots and skills unless they have those spots and skills. And so, you know, somebody with a very creative bent might struggle doing things like running a camp. And they, you know, the thing about Kat and Ginger was it was kind of fun for me to write it because in some ways I'm both of them. And I certainly have had a brain that has worked in all different kinds of ways and felt insecure about those ways. And then other times my brain has worked just fine doing things that are considered, you know, what people can praise and, you know, moving up in the world. So I have this two. And so sometimes, like, I feel like great. And then the other times I feel like such a loser because I always feel like I'm a car with one or two wheels rounding a corner on the road, you know. So it was kind of fun to come at both of those places with, you know, real love and empathy for both of them.
That's really key, because you do write that into the characters. Because it could be very easy to not like some of these, you know, these two characters, but you do, you know,
you're
rooting for them
to,
you know, come get over what their old relationship was. But yeah, very fun. We do have Jonah in Abrams has a comment for us. Go ahead, Jonah.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say that I'm only 25 years old, but I remember in first grade singing the Camp Granada song. So that started playing at the beginning of the program. And I know you said, like people of a certain vintage will remember it. But honestly, I'm not that old and I remember it. So
I love the
crappy summer camp experience. I think as long as we have as long as we have forests and lakes and things, that experience, there will always be Camp Granadas out there to, you know.
Yeah.
Very true.
Let's hope so.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? During when we're there, it can be horrible. But afterwards, oh my gosh, we have so much fun talking about it. And yeah, so thank you, Jonah. Appreciate that. Dot in Manitowoc has a comment. Go right ahead, Dot.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm starting to put things together to write a book. And it's about, the name of the book is called Garden Giggles, things that have happened in my garden. And I have never done this before, so I don't know where to start. But I'm starting by just putting little paragraphs together of funny things that have happened in my garden. Where should I go from here?
Well, I can tell you the easiest place to find the best information about this is janefriedman.com. She is sort of the first lady of all kinds of publishing information and how to write books. And you can find everything you need on that website. And she has a new book coming out. It's launching very soon. And it's The Business of Writing. And I would suggest, you know, either her last print of that or the one that's coming up is a great way, because you sort of have to understand both the business and the craft of it. And her website will give you everything you need.
All right. Well, Dot, good luck with that. And, you know, if you get to publishing, you just send us a copy here. It might work for our garden talk segment. So we know what it's like to have giggles in the garden. It's a great title.
It is. Okay.
I always thought that I would love to write a book just because I would like to do the names of the people and the names of the places and the businesses, but I'm too lazy to do the rest. Jane in Algoma, what can we help you with, or what do you have to tell us?
Is that me?
That's you.
Jane?
Yep.
It's Algoma. Algoma.
Oh,
O-G-E-M-A.
I'm sorry. Yep, I mispronounced that. Go right ahead, Jane.
When I was in high school, my mother was a cook at a camp up in Manakwa, Camp Agawak, and my sister and I took turns taking care of the boss's daughter.
Oh.
They didn't know that we were twins, so we each alternated one day at a time, and they didn't know there was two of us.
That's amazing.
I love that.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a great story.
Oh, thank you, Jane. I appreciate you sharing that with us. It kind of reminds me of The Parent Trap.
Yeah.
I just watched that, actually.
Yeah.
So, very fun. Some of the situations that happen in your book, what were some of the most fun ones to write?
Oh, I don't usually write a sex scene, but the sex scene was so much fun to write.
Mm-hmm.
I saw, you know, the one thing about sex scenes is that in real life, they are very awkward, especially if you're having sex with somebody that you don't know and as well as maybe you should, even though she did know him very well. And she was pregnant. And so it was so fun to write that. Like, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it, if I was going to skip it. But then it was like really fun to write. That was one of my favorites. And then the other scene that I don't want to give it away, but then when all of the campers come together just before the gala is going to come, and they're all afraid that what they've set up is going to look terrible. And they, by all rights, it should look terrible.
Should.
Yeah. And that moment of hope and quirkiness was really fun to write, too.
Yeah, I can see that. There were a lot of really, really fun ones. And the characters themselves. We all know these people.
We do.
Yeah.
You do.
Did you base them off of people that you knew?
Or? I don't. No. Yeah. They just sort of come to me whole.
Okay.
But, you know, they're not unfamiliar, you know, to anyone, I think. I think that you can kind of picture any of them. But no, I don't. I don't base them on people. And if I did, I think I would get hung up on what those real people would or wouldn't do. So I just create the new ones. A lot of times people will say, I think that's me, you know. And I think, well, everybody sort of says that. And almost always they're wrong. So
isn't that funny how we see ourselves so differently than how others see us?
Yeah. But I love that they put themselves in the characters.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want them to do.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I love to do that myself.
Yeah.
Now, like you had read there the first page, Kat is pregnant. So why did you want to have your main character pregnant?
You know, there's a couple of things about making someone pregnant. One, it's a sight gag. So anything she does... And camp is usually like acres and acres. So she's really got to get moving through the whole camp. And I just thought, that's funny. And then also there's a ticking clock associated with it. So you never know, you know, what's going to happen. Are we going to see her deliver? Are we not going to see her deliver? Like, we need to have this sorted out before she does it. She makes it very clear that that has to happen. So there was a couple of reasons. And then there had to be sort of some tension about who the father was and what he had to do with the camp and whether it was going to survive. So it was kind of a good point for a whole bunch of her desires to have problems with, you know.
When you do a book, do you have the idea first and then the characters or?
Yeah, I have like a, so what I usually do is I have a premise, like some kind of premise that strikes me as interesting. And then I can't let it go. If I can't let it go, then I know. Okay. And then I look at it and go, why does that interest me so much? Like, what is it about that that you want to explore? And then I think of a character that would be absolutely miserable if put in there. And then I build the book around that character. And the premise is like her worst nightmare.
I love that.
Yeah.
So you've done that with your other books?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do it with my other books often. Sometimes I have a title first, like with I Like You Just Fine When You're Not Around. I had that title first.
I love that title. It's great.
And then I was like, who is that? But often I just come up with like what if somebody was on the Hollywood set, didn't even watch movies, had to be a costumer and had, but couldn't leave and needed to work. Like, and so then I try to put people, I sort of like the idea of putting normal people, normal meaning, like people that are just living their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody.
Right.
And put them in like a situation where they have to be a superhero and they have no skills in that regard. Like zero skills. Like, because whenever I'm watching a movie or like some major thing happens and that person has to be, you know, they're all of a sudden they're great at karate or something. My people have no skills.
So like most of us.
Yeah, like
right?
us. You like know? Most of us.
We have this, you know, all of a sudden it happens to you and then you just have to get smart fast as you can. So yeah.
And you just do it with what skills you have, and that to me is funny.
Yeah.
Like it's just very funny.
Because funny is kind of what you're aiming for, right?
Yeah.
You want to put these horrible situations, but you know, you laugh at them, then not quite so bad.
Right. I think everything, I always say this, I think everything's funny and a little bit sad, but I really do. And
that's true.
All human situations, usually, they're just kind of, like, I spent a lot of time writing postcards for a candidate last night, and I kept thinking about things that I could put in there that I did not do. And all of those moments, to me, are moments where I would like to explore it for some reason.
Uh-huh.
People's oddities.
Well, you kind of do that in one of the times where you do have Kat and one of the people from the park writing, making up stories about this art that's been abandoned so that they can auction it off. And the sadder the story, the better it gets. You must have had a good time doing that.
Oh, my God, that was so fun. I had to cut a bunch of them because I was like, you're having too good of a time. Nobody's going to read these stories.
Okay, so maybe you need to put that on social media, you know, once a month. Here's
once
another
month.
Story with a really horrible piece of art.
Yeah. That was really funny and fun to do.
And it is funny because, you know, we were talking about The Wizard of Oz earlier and how much a pair of Dorothy's shoes just went for.
How much was it?
$33.2 million, I believe. It was crazy. It was in December. But it's like much of the story in the background is what they're worth. So
yes.
It's really similar to that kind of a thing.
It is.
But any art, I think, is like that.
Art is like that. Mm-hmm. And actually, that was based on a study. That study that I said in the book, there actually was a place where they took weird things, wrote stories about them, and got big money for it. And I thought that would be ridiculous and also great.
It is great. Absolutely. Yeah. So anybody out there planning an auction? Okay, there you go.
There you go.
We planned it out for you.
Mm-hmm.
Dave in Sun Prairie with a question. Go right ahead, Dave.
Yes, I was just wondering if you had a software plan or something I could put into my phone where when you type a book that you're working on into it, that it maybe devises it in chapters already, or a way to kind of set the book up and how you type it into some type of a software.
You know, I think there is probably screenplay software for that kind of thing. And certainly there are, like I use Scrivener when I'm writing, but Scrivener, you have to put all the information in. It doesn't do anything for you except it's an online like notebook kind of. And there are other kind of novel projects that help you put things into things like in a three-act structure or something like that. There's another one, and I just can't remember what it's called. But there is novel writing software that sort of helps you. It wouldn't automatically sort it for you, but it would definitely, help you see how you might organize your story around the largest emotional component that your story is about.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that call. You're in a group of writers, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but how important is that for someone like, the lady that was writing The Garden Giggles, and for Dave, who are interested in writing a book but have no experience?
Yeah.
So is a group like that a really good starting point, too?
Well, I think our group is like a marketing group where we try really hard to get, we are super generous with our connections and make sure that we shout out about our members' work and things like that. But when I first began, since I was a scientist, I didn't have any experience with writers. I didn't know any authors. I didn't know anything about the business. So I started from scratch. And without a doubt, getting to know other writers who are interested in the same thing as you, everyone is going to have a different piece of information. And building that community is probably the best thing you can do for yourself. So, there's free classes at libraries, or there are online. You can find so many classes. There's podcasts called, there's one that I love called The Don't Tell Us About Writing. Sorry.
But, okay, we beep that out.
Okay, sorry. But that's what it's called. And it's run by an agent and a couple of the different authors. And so like Chicago Writers Conference, Let's Just Write is happening in March. You could go there, you meet the people that are sitting next to you, and you collect names. And building that community is not only going to help you write your book, it's going to help you learn about the business. And then when the business is over and you get a book out, whatever, however you decide to do it, those are the people that support you.
Yeah, that's really important, isn't it?
It is, because, you see, as a writer, you see people kind of glaze over when you tell them about your book. And that can be useful, because you can kind of go, okay, I got to figure out a different way to say it because people look bored. But also your partners, they don't know what you're going through necessarily. And it's really helpful to have other people that know what you're doing. You know, for a long time, I had to explain to my friends, like, I don't just sit down and write. Like, I get, it's not just in my head and it comes out on my...
If only, right?
Yeah. Like, every sentence I write has to be attached to the sentence before it and a sentence in the future. So I have to hold the whole book in my head when I'm writing that. And I remember when I was telling someone that, they're like, oh, I just thought you had 2 hours in the morning and you just got it all down. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's not how it is.
Yeah. I think that some people don't realize how hard work it is. A lot of work. It's a lot of concentration. And you have to have a story people want to be interested in.
Yeah.
People have asked me, too. It's because we do so many books. You know, it's like, I've got this book, and it's a memoir. And I'm like, okay, but what's
the
story? What's the story? You start here, and you go here. How does, basic stuff like that. And so finding these groups, getting this advice, so important.
So important. Mm-hmm. You know, it took me a really long time to even talk about this way, but in my experience, because I teach at Drexel MFA and I've taught at several other MFAs and I teach at conferences all the time, that I do think the number one problem that people have is they don't have a story.
Yeah.
They have a premise and they have a lot of events, but they don't have the story of an emotional arc that makes us feel something so strong that we understand what that character wants and needs, and we hope that they get something, even though they might not.
Yeah.
And I think often people think a story is, you know, just a series of events, and it's not. It's a story is only a story if we have our emotions attached to it and we're watching someone change because of the things that we've put in their place.
Mm-hmm.
And I really... If anybody ever remembers anything that I've ever said, that will change the way that you watch movies, read books. All of a sudden, you start to see it, and you're like, oh, I get it now. That's why I'm so interested in this.
Yes,
and that's why I'm not interested in this other book or television show or something.
I think probably a good place to even do that in a short, compacted thing is a play.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's specifically written to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's three acts or however many it is. But it's just like a 2 hours of your time or 3 hours. How did they manage to tell that entire story in just that in that short period of time? So that's a really good template to start. So we had mentioned earlier about the Wizard of Oz playing lots of parts in this book. Do you love The Wizard of Oz? Is it a favorite?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, yes, I do love The Wizard of Oz, but mostly because I love the idea of the each person having something like a core wound that they are trying to change, and they are bold enough to try to change that core wound. And so for me and the characters, I wanted the people in that to understand or at least come through their core wounds one way or the other. And it was really fun to put a parallel into The Wizard of Oz because I think it shows how well that story is told, but also how that's sort of everyone's story. We just want to be okay. We want to go home. We want to feel comfortable with whatever it is we're fighting with. Like maybe we just don't feel like we're smart enough, or maybe we're just, you know, don't have a heart for something. I love the premise of that.
Mm-hmm. And that really does inform the characters that you have. And so I listened to the book because...
Oh, yeah, that's fun. She's great. Andy Arndt.
She did a really good job.
Isn't she great?
I'm very picky about my author.
Me too.
My narrators. And she's wonderful. And so I listened to it all the way through, and I'm like, I think I need to listen to it again because I enjoyed it so much. I really wasn't paying attention to all this stuff that I should be if I'm going to interview you, right? So I listened to it again and I was like, oh, wow, I forgot about that. And this was really good. It's not a short book. I mean, it's 10 hours, I think, on Audible.
Yeah.
So, it's really fun to get that perspective. Did you have any say into who was going to be the narrator?
Usually they do let me... audition them. They send me audition tapes. But Andy, I think, did the last one. And so I was like, I love her. She can do it.
Yeah. It's nice when you have a narrator associated with the authors that you like.
Yeah. And I know that she would do a good job. Like, I tried to audition for it myself, but I'm glad they didn't pick me, honestly, because I think she does a better, more professional job.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of hard, though. I mean, you've got like a theater kind of background,
I do have a theater background. And also I have a very loud Wisconsin accent, which I thought would be fun. But I'm not sure I could change my voices like she did. Like, she was really good at it.
Mm-hmm. The key to those good narrators is that they can change their voice subtly, where it doesn't hit you in the face.
I don't know how they do it.
It's amazing. It really
is. Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I just got this from Clara. She said that you are friends with Christina Clancy.
Yeah.
So how did you guys get to know each other?
So It's so great, actually. So in 2004, the Wisconsin Book Festival had a fiction writing contest. And I entered the contest having no experience writing fiction at all. But it was $10. You had to write it in 24 hours. They sent you a piece of art, and then you had to write a story about it. And I thought, nobody will know that I didn't win. Nobody will know I entered. Nobody will know. But I just thought it seemed like a fun challenge.
Sure.
And so when they sent it, I did it. And then, you know, it was like 3 months or something. It was a long time before we heard anything. And then I was in a wedding in San Francisco when I got a phone call that said, "Ann, you won second place."
Oh, my goodness.
And they're like, everybody that entered the contest is going to be at the Orpheum Theater waiting to see if they heard and won. And we're going to announce all the winners tonight. And I was like, tonight?
Oh, my gosh.
So I missed it. Somebody else came in and read my story on the stage, which was great.
Uh-huh.
But Christy won first place.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't know Christy at the time. And then after that, I connected with her. She was living in Milwaukee at the time. And then over the years, we've just gotten to be very close.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really fun. Mm-hmm. I love that. So before that, why did you decide to do that? I mean, were you always interested in writing?
Well, I've always been a heavy reader, like a wonderful reader. And authors, honestly, were my superheroes, like ever since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And I would write letters to them. But I never thought that I had the ability to write a book. I hadn't had any ideas. But people would say to me, oh, you know, I would write letters. And people were like, why aren't you writing a book? And I was like, I don't know. But how do you write a book? How do you even get an idea? And so I think it was just kind of... it was just a challenge, and I thought, this maybe I could write this short story. Maybe I could do that. And so what it did for me was all it did was say to me, oh, you picture something in your head, and you write it down and describe it, and now I have a million story ideas. And so it opened up my world in a way that I would never have done before. I'm so glad that I did it because it changed my life.
Yeah.
And I do think it was like one of the happiest days of my life. And I mean, I had babies, but babies hurt when they come out. So this was like without pain. It was a surprise from the universe. It was the most amazing thing. And it just, and the other thing, it validates your voice so much. And I was in a PhD program where, you know, my professor kept saying to me, my mentor is like, you are the worst writer I've ever met. And honestly, I really wasn't meant to write science.
Mm-hmm.
Science is telling a story, but telling a story in a really prescribed way.
Yes.
I was terrible at it.
Not because you wanted to add too much flourish,
yeah, I would
right?
be like, the subjects have blue eyes. And he'd be like, you can't, what do you do? I don't care.
It's part of the story.
It was so hard. I kept changing the words instead of using, don't change that sentence. It's like, oh my God, I'm so bad at this. And I had published a lot of science. In fact, one of my sciences is in here as an Easter egg.
Oh.
In the book, one of my articles that I published, I used it.
Oh, okay. I know which one you're talking about. I didn't realize that. That is cool.
Yeah.
We are talking to Ann Garvin. She is a USA Today bestselling author, and her latest is the funny and fun and just lovely Bummer Camp. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Najah. Right now, we're talking about the novel Bummer Camp with Ann Garvin. So, Ann, what are you working on now?
Oh, thank you for asking. I'm working on a new novel that I have to get in by September 1st.
Okay.
And it's called Tell Two Friends. And it's a story, it's a little bit of a departure for me. The story is about a woman who wrote to an incarcerated man when she was in college, and 25 years later, he moves in next door, unbeknownst to her, and is watching her. And so again, it's funny and sad. Her story is very funny and sad, and it's wrapped in a thriller. And the reason that I wanted to write that was this idea again of just us living our lives with our own little traumas, and then some larger thing is happening. So I'm writing it from the point of view of the person watching, and then her life completely oblivious that she's being watched.
Oh, that sounds really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's had a moment in her life where she is really felt like she's lost her ability to judge people. And so at the climax, she's really tested. And she's got to have a gut feeling about something.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of hard, isn't it, sometimes, to follow your gut feeling?
Well, the world is constantly telling you you're wrong, right?
Yep,
so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a really fun, it's super fun, and I really hope I can pull it off.
Oh, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. We'll look forward to it, so make sure that I get a copy.
I will. So. Absolutely.
So what do you love about being a writer?
Oh, my gosh, so many things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite my dream job, without a doubt. I get to meet other authors. I get to talk about writing and stories every day, all day. I get to watch TV and think, this is research. I get to sit and sort of explore all of the things that I need to explore in my own brain that maybe if I started to do it in a real way, I might stop. But this forces me to go all the way through some really tough things and mm-hmm. topics. I get to talk about the things that I did research in for all those years and put in my characters in it. I don't know. Like when I was a professor and I was teaching health behavior, which nobody wants to know. No one wants to know that they have to change their health behavior.
Nobody wants to hear it. No.
Nobody wants to hear it. I mean, you are the worst. They'd rather take a class and, you know, physics than listen to you about I can't drink that much beer, you know.
Yes.
So it was a hard thing, but sometimes I get to put some of those things, sneak them in a little, mm-hmm. which I absolutely love to be able to do. It's sort of stealth. It's like a Trojan horse of health in the book.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, there are some of those things in there.
Yeah.
So now that I know that, I can definitely hear that.
Yeah.
So, you had mentioned earlier that you because Kat is pregnant, it's visually funny, you're writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's not that visual unless you describe it.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have this picture in your head mm-hmm. of what you're seeing to make mm-hmm. it fun, and then you describe it?
Yeah.
What are the keys of doing it well? And not too much description, but
yeah.
enough?
Oh, that's such a good question. Holy cow. I try to keep it in scene so that you are experiencing it as the reader as along with the person writing it. So, and then if there is a descriptive thing, it's sort of like when you describe, like if I'm going to say to you, you know, oh, I broke my foot. I went to the hospital the other day. I got an x-ray. It's broken. And then I go into the story.
Yeah.
That narrative has to be this tiny little thing that says like, oh yeah, she's wearing this or
yeah.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try really hard to not make it an isolated thing where she isn't living, she isn't grounded in the moment on the ground. And so I try really hard to like picture it and try to bring the senses in and make it in scene and try to cut out anything that isn't necessary to move the plot forward, but also make everybody feel usually cringy, often embarrassed. And also then, oh my God, I'm so sad for her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think truly, to be honest, I think it's mostly because I love my characters. I love them so much. And the ones I don't like, I dislike so much that it's I just get around my own emotion in it. And then I try really hard to describe it. But I think if you're detached from your people that you're writing about, you can't really write it
mm-hmm.
in the way that the other people need to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what sometimes I do it well. Other times, you know, it yeah. takes a long time.
Yeah, of course.
So
of course.
Much deleting.
What is it like to work with a publisher?
Mm.
I mean, you know, that's the dream,
mm-hmm.
okay? But what does it come down to?
Well, comes down to your relationship with the publisher and sort of an agreement that you have that you are both professionals working towards the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that being smart about what you want and who you are while still understanding that they're the professionals and experts in certain areas is a very important thing. And it's, you know, over the years, I was more like, I will write this book for buttons for you if you want. And then I became more like, I don't like that cover, you know? And so, and, but I was always like, I may not like that cover, but I bet if you change that, I'll bet we could kind of work our way through it. And so I tell everybody, if you're going to work with a publisher, if you're trying to find an agent, the first thing you need to do is take your meds.
Okay, let me write this down.
Yeah, take your meds. Get yourself centered. And then, you know, understand that this part of the creative process is not creative. It's business. Mm-hmm. It's all business. And yes, they're going to create the cover. And yes, they're going to create some of the back jacket copy. And they're going to create the marketing, which is all creative. But still, they're doing it for a reason. They're doing it for a business. And I think one of the things that I have great respect for is when people have skills that I don't have. I don't try to micromanage them. Because I know that I'm not good at it. Why mm-hmm. would I tell them their jobs?
Yeah.
Unless I see something that's really glaring, but it rarely happens. Mm-hmm. I have found to have such pretty good experiences with publishers. Having said that, I've had several.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Okay. Like I had Penguin Random House for two and Simon & Schuster and then now it's Lake Union, and I've had Lake Union for the last bunch of them, who are great.
Yeah,
fantastic.
And that kind of makes sense because your covers are different.
Yeah, they're really different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of funny where publishers have a look.
Yep.
Isn't that? And it's a trendy kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. I probably said this before, and I apologize if you heard it, but so many, I was so tired of getting books where there's women on the cover but facing away from you. I mean, how many?
Historical fiction?
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone.
Why?
I don't know. It got to be ridiculous.
Yes, it was.
It is silly.
Well, John called, but he couldn't stay with us. And he wants to know, what's the path from writing your book to getting it published?
Oof.
I'm sure people ask you that a lot.
They do. And it's a really good question. It's probably something you and I could talk about on the radio for 3 hours, but
well,
really,
we've got 5 minutes.
Yeah. I think you need to read Jane Friedman's The Business of Publishing and read as much as you can about it, because once you write the book, you have to get it cleaned up and edited and absolutely best. But then you have to learn about marketing so that when you are talking about your book, you're talking about it in a way that makes people interested in it. And that's a marketing hat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I spend a lot of time teaching that very thing because it's something that can be learned, but you really have to put the time in. And if you don't, you're going to have some trouble. You know?
Yeah. And a publisher won't necessarily do all of the publicizing that you want it. So you're in there. I mean, you do social media really well.
You really are in there mm-hmm, doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to do that. And I think, okay, but you have to show your publisher that you're in there to win it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And also, I also say, you know, nothing works and everything works, but I've been doing this for 12 years. I have about 11,000 people on my email list. I wouldn't have had that. I started with one.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what you need to do. So it's a big job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for everybody.
No.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you self-publish, good for you.
Yeah.
Like, criminy, you get it out there, you give it to your family, you sell a few books. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful thing.
It is. It is wonderful. But
yeah.
Don't be afraid of an editor, right?
Don't be afraid of it. Never be afraid of an editor.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an editor. Her name is Tiffany Yates Martin. She's amazing. And we have like a throwdown. But I don't think she knows it's a throwdown because I'm having it at my house alone.
Sure.
But she, she pushes me really hard to be the best. But then sometimes, you know, I push back and you know, she always says, this is your book. This is your book. And so you have to listen to them and change things and not change something. It's a fight to the finish.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's not finished when you say the end at the end of
no.
that first
oh, God,
go
no.
through.
No, it surely isn't. Yeah.
It's got to be really hard to cut out things that you've worked so hard on.
I have to say, less than it used to be because I'm writing on a deadline, so I just like chop things. But
yeah.
But yeah, especially if I have a line that I like love and I carry that dang line all the way through the end, and I think I don't have a spot for it, so that's hard. But the other thing I would say is that like when I'm editing a paragraph, sometimes that paragraph takes 4 hours to edit.
Yeah, people don't understand. It's, yeah. Wordsmithing. Yeah.
Wordsmithing.
Well, yeah. And we've had a wonderful time.
Oh, we have.
Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. So Ann Garvin has been our guest. Her latest book is Bummer Camp. I really, you know, I really recommend you go out and buy it.
Thank you.
Enjoy it. So thank you for being with
us.
Yeah,
it's such a great thing to be here.
And I want to thank our team. We've got Claire Neipert, Joel Patenaude. We've got Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. And, of course, Larry Mueller is our general host. I'm the executive producer, Jill Nadeau. Thank you so much for being with us. Skinner.
He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors, this should scare you. But my bunkmate has malaria.